next 2 years, wondering, is there nothing that's sacred? Clearly not. Is there nothing that sort of chills him to the bone and shushes him? Clearly not. I mean, the other thing that's clear is there's no circumstance in which that Twitter feed can be not even silenced. I wouldn't ask for that, but slowed. I mean, the tweets, and we didn't put them all up because we don't want to amplify all the lunacy. But I mean, he is tweeting at an increased clip, which seems to signify, from all of your great reporting, all Phil's great reporting, increased anxiety, which is what Phil's reporting on, Jonathan's reporting on, and close allies describe.
I was on your show 2 weeks ago when it was in the middle of Donald Trump's trip from visiting the hospital in Dayton, Ohio, and then going to El Paso. Mm-hmm. And on that day when he's meeting victims, survivors, family members who have lost loved ones, he's tweeting away yep. about his political rivals.
It's attacking Joe Biden yes, from and, the flight between Dayton
and it was and a special low, and this is yet another special low, but it comes in the aftermath of his summer of racism, where he is just constantly playing the race card, dividing the country, attacking Elijah Cummings, gloating over Elijah Cummings' home being robbed, and then you're telling elected congresswomen to go back home.
The New York Times tried to make sense of Donald Trump's botched weekend as the storm chaser in chief this way. Quote, by 8 p.m. Monday, as Dorian turned toward Florida, Mr. Trump's boarded up Mar-a-Lago resort, the president had golfed twice and since Saturday morning pelted the American public with 122 tweets. Mr. Trump awaited landfall by assuming the role of meteorologist-in-chief, adding weatherman-style updates to a usual weekend routine of attacking his enemies, retweeting bits of praise, and critiquing the performance of his cable news allies. Adding to the feeling of a rudderless nation, instead of looking steeped in the details of the slow-moving storm or motivated to act in the wake of another mass shooting, it's hard to elicit a correction from the National Weather Service. But after Trump wrongly lumped Alabama in with a group of states that were in harm's way, officials there were forced to put out this statement. Quote, Alabama will not see any impacts from Dorian. We repeat, no impacts from Hurricane Dorian will be felt across Alabama. The system will remain too far east.
We love the people of Florida, and they went through something that I guess the likes of which we could really say nobody's ever seen before. They've never seen a category like this coming, because it came in really at a five.
It was a category five. I never even knew a category five existed, and they suffered greatly.
They say they've never seen winds like this anywhere. Got hit as a five, category five storm, which literally never happens.
The second one hit Puerto Rico as a Category 5. I don't believe anybody's ever seen that happen before.
It was like having hundreds of tornadoes, the winds. So we've never seen it. Actually touched down as a Category 5. People have never seen anything like that. And this has been a Category 5, which few people have ever even heard of.
A Category 5. Nobody's ever heard of a 5 hitting land.
I saw the devastating effects of that Category 5. Hurricane, Category 5. Never heard about Category 5s before. Category 5 is big stuff.
I'm not sure that I've ever even heard of a Category 5. I knew it existed, and I've seen some Category 4s. You don't even see them that much. But a Category 5 is something that I don't know that I've ever even heard the term, other than I know it's there. That's the ultimate, and that's what we have, unfortunately.
Of course, the big story is Hurricane Dorian. It's currently Category 2, but over the weekend it grew to a Category 5 storm that has devastated the Bahamas. Now the storm is hovering off the coast of the United States. No one is sure if it's going to make landfall or where. And by no one, I mean Donald Trump. Over the weekend, he pelted the American public with 122 tweets, including dozens of updates about the storm, mixed in with comments about the trade war with China, complaints about James Comey, and his annoyance with the actress Deborah Messing. Plus, his tweets weren't overburdened with accuracy. For instance, on Sunday, he tweeted, "In addition to Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, and Alabama, will most likely be hit much harder than anticipated, looking like one of the largest hurricanes ever, already Category 5. Be careful, God bless everyone." Why the all caps? Does he think the storm drowns out his tweets? Well, it's really coming down out there. I want to put the cap locks on. Can you read me now?
The president also misstated the storm's possible trajectory.
Alabama could even be in for at least some very strong winds, and something more than that it could be. So for Alabama, just please be careful also.
While Hurricane Dorian was hitting the Bahamas, President Trump was hitting the links. On Monday, the president played golf at his Trump National Golf Club in Virginia. Aides say he did receive hourly briefings on the storm. We should remind you, President Trump had canceled a diplomatic trip to Poland sent to mark the 80th anniversary of the beginning of World War II in order, his aide said, to better monitor the storm.
So when it comes to hurricanes, President Trump doesn't remember the category. He doesn't know where they're going, and he's not even really paying attention. Luckily, he does have a way to stop them.
As Dorian churns, so are ideas about how to stop hurricanes in their tracks. Why? This report in Axios that President Trump suggested on multiple occasions that national security officials explore disrupting the storms by dropping a nuke right into the middle of them. Now, during a recent White House briefing, Axios quotes the president saying, I got it. Why don't we nuke them? They start forming off the coast of Africa. As they're moving across the Atlantic, we drop a bomb inside the eye of the hurricane and it disrupts it. Why can't we do that? Well, the briefer reportedly replied, we'll look into it.
Something tells me Trump hears the phrase, we'll look into it, about 50 times a day. He just says random shit. What if Oreos had the cream on the outside and the cookie on the inside? We'll look into it, sir. Now, as president, you should know that nuking a hurricane is a terrible idea. All right? Not only will it not stop the hurricane, but now you have nuclear fallout being spread by 200-mile-an-hour winds.
It's like putting Chernobyl on jet skis.
What have they done?
Hey, the CSI.
I don't have to. Look, that's graphite on the roof. The whole building's been blown open. The core's exposed.
I can't see how you can tell that from here.
Oh, for God's sakes. Look at that glow. That's radiation ionizing the air.
Well, if we can't see, we don't know. Get us directly over the building.
Boris,
don't use my name.
If we fly directly over,
I don't see your advice.
We'll be dead within a week. Dead! Sir?
Get us over that building, or I'll have you shot.
If you fly directly over that core, I promise you by tomorrow morning, you'll be begging for that bullet.
Trump can never admit he was wrong about anything, so the next day he fired back.
I suggested yesterday at FEMA that, along with Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina, even Alabama could possibly come into play, which was true. They made a big deal about this, dot, dot, dot. When, in fact, under certain original scenarios, it was, in fact, correct that Alabama could have received some hurt. Okay? I'm not wrong, because at one point, I was right. Under certain circumstances, it could have hit Alabama. I know this because I write weather fan fiction.
Of course, Donald Trump is trying to help the only way he knows, by being an old man yelling at wind. Today, in the Oval Office, our weather tracker in chief explained why Dorian has been so hard to forecast.
It's a very erratic, a very slow, very powerful hurricane.
Erratic. slow, powerful, and destructive. It's like looking in a mirror. But...
But Trump wasn't interested in where the storm is going to go. He wanted to talk more about where the storm was going to go.
That was the original chart, and you see it was going to hit not only Florida, but Georgia. It could have was going toward the Gulf. That was what was originally projected.
Why? Why, you ask, did Trump show a map with an outdated projection of Dorian's path instead of one showing where the storm actually went? I'm glad I pretended you asked. Remember last 2 days how we got into a disagreement with the National Weather Service where he tweeted the storm was going to hit Alabama and they said, what? No. Well, take a closer look at Trump's outdated map from last Thursday morning. He used a Sharpie to extend the path into Alabama.
We had actually our original chart was that it was going to be hitting Florida directly. Maybe I could just see that, Kevin. It was going to be hitting directly, and that would have affected a lot of other states. But that was the original chart.
Okay, so twice he said that was the original chart. But let's zoom in. You can see someone drew a circle with what seems to be a Sharpie. So the original chart now includes Alabama. This was the real original chart, which did not include Alabama.
This is him announcing to the American people that he's got an update for the American public on the hurricane. And this is his update. This is him in the middle of a large hurricane bearing down on the United States, holding up a doctored map that, for whatever reason, conveys false information about the track of that storm to us, the American people, who are currently in the midst of trying to figure out how best to prepare for that storm's impact. The president's giving the country false information about where the storm might be heading. For the record, it's also a crime for a president or anyone to falsify a weather forecast.
Title 18, U.S. Code 2074, which says it's illegal to knowingly falsely represent a forecast or warning issued by the Weather Bureau.
Like, say, a hurricane tracking map, like he did today when he held up this doctored map in the Oval Office.
Let's just go show you the maps. Okay, so he sent the Alabama tweet out saying Alabama was at risk along with Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia. So we can take the weather map and we can show that morning that he sent the tweet about 4 hours before it out. This was the official forecast. So most people in a position of power would wake up, see this, and, you know, pretty obvious, right? But maybe he didn't see it 5 a.m. in the morning. You know, right. Maybe he missed it. So after we went through all this nonsense that you just said today, the president tweeted out this map saying that this was his proof of why Alabama was in the cone. All those squiggly lines are our computer models, and you look at it, you go, ah, he's got us. Look, even some go to Louisiana.
A couple of those lines.
Even Louisiana and Mississippi. Well, you know, if that's the case, I don't know why he left Louisiana and Mississippi off Alabama. So then I was like, well, let's take a closer look at this. Oh, the date is August 28th. Wait, he tweeted that out on September 1st. This was 4 days before he sent the tweet out about Alabama. So I said, well, why would you pick 4 days before the tweet? You know, why would you pick a map?
Yeah.
So I said, okay, well, let's go see what those spaghetti lines looked like. This is on the Weather Nerds website. This is hours before the tweet, what the spaghetti lines looked like.
So it's the same kind of map.
Same kind of map.
But it's the day that he actually sent the Alabama.
Yeah, hours tweet. Before he did it. None of them in the Alabama. So he couldn't have sent that up saying that's the reason why. So maybe he didn't see that. Let's go back 24 hours before he sent out the Alabama tweet. Still, none of the lines go in there.
Wow.
So if that is his proof, then he wants us to believe that for 4 days, canceling Poland and golfing, he didn't get any other weather maps showing it was going. So what's worse, trying to cover this up and keep going on it, or the fact that his argument saying that he, 4 days... We have people at the National Hurricane Center for the last week have been working round-the-clock shifts watching the storm with the best scientific knowledge to help everyone out. They left their families on Labor Day weekend when the storm really started getting really nasty. And you know how many media inquiries they got today? Hey, will you guys comment on this? Will you comment on the president doing this? And what are they supposed to do? They're supposed to be non-political. They're not supposed to. They're just trying to give science. And then we got someone doodling on their maps that the emergency managers use for preparations and evacuations to save people's lives. I mean, I don't know.
Mr. President, you're going to weather jail.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Number nine. situation.
They are standing still.
Upon the telegraph.
Number nine. Number nine.
Watusi, the twist,
Eldorado.
Take this, brother. May it serve you well.
Maybe it's not
what?
That.
What?
Maybe even then. Exposure is something that's so difficult to bear.
Hello. This is Radio Degree Zero. Degree Radio is this. Hello. Zero Degree Radio. This is Radio Degree Zero is this. Hello.
T-minus 5, T-minus 4.
The sound you are hearing is the final countdown to an experimental atomic blast, the most awesome, devastating power known to mankind.
Radioactive fallout, that deadly byproduct of a nuclear attack, will kill literally millions of unprotected families in the event of an atomic attack. Is your family protected? Do you have a fallout shelter?
Now, Survive All Shelters offer an economic, do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Constructed of combination steel and concrete block and civil defense approved, a Survive All Shelter can be assembled in a weekend's time.
Put your time to good use. Assemble a fallout shelter that can save your family from deadly nuclear fallout.
See a Survive All Shelter today.
Should we clap for him or should we?
Oh, and he brought reinforcements.
Where are we
going? Yes. He brought reinforcements.
Yes.
He got reinforcements with him. He got a fedora on.
And everything.
Yeah, what's goody?
He out here with the leather moccasins.
What up?
He looked like he came into a check. I need to borrow $3.
Nah, bro, you need more than $3.
That's all I got.
You're not doing AJ out here looking fancy. Got the sun, the shades.
Ooh,
on
like
the head.
The shades,
first
yes.
day of school vibes.
Mm-hmm.
My mic on, I'm all set.
Yeah, you all set. Listen, before we do anything, J-Mac, did you pull that article up?
Yes, I did.
So can you do that? So we want to take a second right now. I want J-Mac to read something for us and to inform people of what's going on.
Okay.
Here. Let's go.
Okay. Rector says he will not seek re-election. Incumbent Mayor Rick Rector announced today he has dropped out of the race and will not seek re-election. Rector, who lost the Democratic primary to First Ward Alderman Kamal Johnson in June, thanked his supporters in an announcement to end his campaign for re-election. Here's a portion of his statement. During the recent Democratic primary, members of my political party felt that my opponent is better suited for this position, and I respect this and will abide by it, according to Rector. I do not want to be a reason for more political divide in this special city that I and many others have chosen to be our home. I want a unified Hudson where everyone can be proud of all aspects of the community. Consequently, I am ending my campaign for mayor and will focus on working solely on the business of the city and look forward to a productive few months in serving the community and tending to the job of being your mayor, Rector added.
Okay, and do me one big favor.
That was well read. Let's say that first.
Yeah, well,
it's J-Mac. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? J-Mac came with the sauce.
You already know.
But do me one favor, J-Mac. Just give credit for where the source came from. I think it was Amanda Purcell.
Do you want me to give you
a
call? 518-828-1616, extension 2500, or send an email to apurcell@thedailymail.net or tweet to @AmandaJPurcell.
Okay, so now I want to talk to you, the Honorable Slade Diddy.
Yeah.
I don't know how long I can call you that. But what I want to say to you is, you heard about this when we heard about it.
I think
you dropped that 247, if I was correct.
To be honest,
I didn't even. You guys knew before me. Yeah. I looked at my phone and I saw like messages.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
হ্যালো, আপনারা WGXC 90.7 FM রেডিও স্টেশন শুনছেন একরা ক্যাটস্কিল হাসন থেকে, শ্রোতা সমর্থিত হ্যানজন রেডিও কলম্বিয়া এবং গ্রিন কাউন্টি।
WGXC always needs computer donations. If you have an old one you don't need, and it's either a Macintosh 2011 or newer 2.0 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, or Windows 2012 or newer 2.4 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, email info at wgxc.org for more information.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Velo Domestique Bicycle Shop. Professional bicycle services at 437 Route 295 in Chatham. Information at www.velodomestique.com or 518-392-3010.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ruby's Hotel and Restaurant in Freehold, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Give me liberty or give me death.
WGXC, the station that gives you liberty.
Climate colonialism, the picture of Dorian's graves. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Hurricane Dorian devastated parts of the Bahamas, laying waste to much of the islands of Grand Bahama and Abacos.
We are in the midst of a historic tragedy.
That's Prime Minister Hubert Minnis on Monday. The death toll there is 20, but it's expected to rise as reports from rescue teams and survivors emerge. In one unconfirmed report, an entire family was found huddled together, embracing each other in death. Hurricane Dorian, like Maria, Irma, Florence, and Harvey before, signifies a deadly data point in the irrefutable case that human-induced climate change is real and is wreaking havoc with our planet. Dorian is an appropriate moniker for this hurricane. The name itself was coined by the Irish writer Oscar Wilde in his controversial 1891 novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray. In this story, Dorian Gray, a handsome young man, hides a portrait of himself in a locked room. He wanted to pursue a wasteful, hedonistic lifestyle, but avoid losing his good looks to the ravages of such a life. Oscar Wilde wrote, "He had uttered a mad wish that he himself might remain young and the portrait grow old, that his own beauty might be untarnished, and that the face of the canvas bear the burden of his passions and his sins," said Oscar Wilde. Dorian Gray lived a reckless, excessive life, but stayed young and vigorous while the hidden portrait aged hideously. The story could well serve as an allegory for the United States and its profligate role in driving the planet into the worsening climate catastrophe. The U.S. remains the world's historically greatest emitter of greenhouse gases. It's the wealthiest country in history, too, but achieved that with over 150 years of unrelenting industrial pollution, treating the world's atmosphere as an open sewer for the toxic exhaust from its smokestacks and tailpipes. Now, President Trump denies that there's a problem, pointing to rising polluting economies like China and India. While China, with its 1.4 billion people, is currently the greatest emitter of greenhouse gases, the U.S. is still a close second, with all other nations far behind. Plus, our per capita emissions are still among the highest, signifying, on average, a carbon-intensive, unsustainable lifestyle. Meanwhile, on the front lines of the climate disaster, entire communities are damaged or destroyed. Bangladesh is experiencing the worst flooding in a century. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies reports that 7.6 million people there are at risk of hunger and disease. A deadly heat wave swept across Europe this summer, breaking temperature records and sparking wildfires. Ice sheets in Antarctica are melting much faster than previously known, leading to one estimate that sea level rises as a result could displace 2 billion people by the year 2100. In the midst of Hurricane Dorian, Dennis McLean, a spokesperson for the UN Office for Disaster Risk Reduction, spoke to reporters.
This is the fourth consecutive year that we have witnessed an extremely devastating Atlantic hurricane season, including Category 5 hurricanes like Dorian. The sequence cannot be divorced from the fact that these last 5 years have been the hottest ever recorded because of the continuing rise in greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. Hurricane Dorian crystallizes the existential threat posed to small island developing states by the ongoing climate emergency.
The population of the Bahamas currently is about 90% Afro-Bahamian. The country's history is interwoven with colonialism and liberation. Christopher Columbus's first landfall in 1492 was in the Bahamas, where he launched a genocide against the indigenous inhabitants. After Britain eliminated the slave trade in 1807, many who escaped slavery in the U.S., as well as Seminoles fleeing the U.S. Army in Florida, found refuge in the Bahamas.
The Bahamas, like the rest of the Caribbean, is extremely vulnerable, also due to the ongoing legacy of colonialism, the legacy of slavery and indenture that sort of manifested in systemic global exploitation and local corruption as well.
That's Dr. Christian Campbell, a Bahamian poet, scholar, and essayist who was born in Grand Bahama, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. Rescue efforts in the Bahamas are severely hampered by the level of destruction. Inlets are impassable, docks are damaged, and the airports are either underwater or simply destroyed. The U.S. Coast Guard is providing some aid, but the United States, as the greatest emitter of greenhouse gases in history, has a much larger role to play. Dorian Gray, in Oscar Wilde's novel, was ultimately consumed by his excesses, dead on the floor beneath his portrait. The Bahamian survivors of Hurricane Dorian will overcome and forge a path forward. But time is short for the United States to change its ways and assume its proper place in the global effort to avoid irreversible climate catastrophe. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
Audio, radio, audio. Radio. 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 D-O. Ah. D-O. Re. D-Ah. D-O. Re. D-Ah. D-Re. D-Ah. D-Re. D-Ah. D-Re. D-Ah. D-Re. D-Ah. D-O. Re. D.
And it came to pass, when Joshua had spoken unto the people, that the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns passed on before the Lord, and blew with the trumpets. Joshua said unto the people, Shout, for the Lord hath given you the city. Frequency waves emitted from 1 to 2 meter dishes result in blunt object trauma from waves generated in front of target. Effects range from discomfort to death. A Russian device that can propel a 10 sonic hertz bullet the size of a baseball hundreds of yards is thought to exist.
And the walls came
Colonel Walter Manley, and I am the living spirit of the Jericho Institute, where we use sound creatively in the production of non-lethal weapons designed to save lives by changing the hearts and minds of our adversaries. During the Vietnam War, we still confused sonic power with high volume. For example, in the so-called urban funk campaign, where we mounted supersized oscillators onto attack helicopters and blasted Victor Charlie with heavy metal at around 120 dB. We called that weapon the Curdler, and it was a very primitive system. But we also used high-frequency nighttime wailing sounds in a weapon we called the Wandering Ghost, intended to spook the Viet Cong by playing on certain Buddhist beliefs. And that weapon was a big step forward, because we came to realize there is no sound more powerful than the one that conquers your true heart with deep vibrations.
Thank you.
The sound of the shofar, which is a purified sound because the priests who blew the horns had been purified. And so in blowing that horn, they have something of that sacred wind of God, ruach, I think is the Hebrew word, with which God breathed the life into Adam. So once you've harnessed the power of God through the purity of the priests, there's no telling what power might come out of it. And the power to knock down an adversary's city wall seems small compared to the things that might be done by the might of God.
Deference tones. Devices which can project a voice or other sound to a particular location. The resulting sound can only be heard in that location.
This is Bill Arkin. I'm NBC News military analyst, newspaper columnist, and author of the forthcoming book, Code Names, Deciphering U.S. Military Plans and Operations in the 9/11 World. Proponents of acoustic weapons would say to you that they are as old as biblical times. But let's be real. These are highly engineered, modern digital weapons that take advantage of our greater knowledge both of the workings of the human ear and the human brain, as well as make use of sophisticated technologies to be able to project sound both over long distances and also over incredible decibel levels. And I don't think there's any real relationship between the weapons which are being developed today and those that existed in biblical times. But I think that the reference to that is to it's at least suggest that the use of sound is something that is itself as old as war.
Polysound, loud music used by American forces to drive Noriega from the Vatican Embassy.
Here at the Jericho Institute, ultimately, what we are talking about is a weapon that uses subharmonic infrasound, amplified by the power of evangelical Christian faith, to summon and deploy a voice that sounds like it's coming from right inside your head, but also sounds like it is coming from everywhere else. A voice that comes from everywhere and nowhere, from everyone and no one. And when you hear it, you will obey, no matter what it says, because the real weapon that brought down those walls of Jericho was the voice of God.
From the early origins of Western civilization, sound is closely associated with magic. Much of this is forgotten or nearly forgotten. One well-known surviving example is the magical incantation, Abracadabra. The point here is that the widespread belief is that the right vocal utterance can bring about some physical manifestation or life or even bring the universe into existence. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 3, which says, "And God said, let there be light, and there was light." The interesting thing is that he had to create light. He didn't have to create sound. Sound was pre-existing. This continues with the creation of Adam in Genesis 2, verse 7, which in my translation said, "Then the Lord breathed into man's nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul." But if you look at the Targum, that translates the phrase "a living soul" as a speaking spirit. So my point here is to connect sound with breath and with wind and with spirit. And it's interesting to me that the Hebrew word for breath and wind and spirit is the same, ruach. That idea of sound and magic continues in religion today because many religious people believe that prayers uttered aloud have magical powers to influence life. and even to change the course of history.
And the walls came tumbling down.
The development of modern exotic weaponry, those weapons in the areas of the new physical principles of microwaves, lasers, and acoustic beams, began sometime after the end of Desert Storm, the first Gulf War, an era where it was pretty clear that peacekeeping was going to be a major function of the Western militaries. And there was a recognition that the tools were not available in order to do those jobs. If somehow non-lethal weapons could be developed that would enhance the ability of soldiers to conduct peacekeeping operations, then the notion was that certainly those weapons should be developed and should be deployed.
True sound of all true sounds. True voice of all true voices. True God of all true gods, Lord, hear our prayer.
I'm troubled by two aspects. One, that there is a suggestion that the introduction of this kind of exotic weaponry is somehow going to change the nature of warfare, somehow be able to leapfrog over some of the immutable rules of warfare. I think that kind of thinking, the shock and awe thinking, if you will, is what brought us to where we are today in Iraq. That there's a silver bullet, that we're going to win quickly, we're going to win so overwhelmingly, we're going to employ our high technology in such a way that the rules of warfare are going to be set aside.
And they shall know for all time the true voice of the one true king. Lord, hear our prayer. Lord, hear
our prayer. There has been a strong push to develop some kind of a means of protecting sensitive installations, nuclear weapons bunkers, for instance.
Squawk box, crowd dispersal weapon, field tested by the British Army in Ireland in 1973.
By placing a very powerful acoustic alarm, if you will, inside of a nuclear weapons bunker, one that is capable of causing such excruciating pain.
It produces giddiness, nausea, or fainting.
So excruciating that you would not be able to penetrate the area that was being protected.
The beam is so small that it can be directed at specific individuals.
At the Jericho Institute, we like to think of America's deep and abiding Christian faith as one of our most strategically potent natural resources. We have extensive prayer networks throughout the Bible Belt and elsewhere, and our objective is to synchronize the latent vibrational power of these faith networks with an infrasonic sound that formally replicates the voice of God in terms of its frequency range and overall acoustic envelope. We call this process charging the airspace, a process that resembles rubbing on the magic bottle until the genie comes out. Ladies and gentlemen, God is there to hear our prayer. Now it is true that the previous assumption was that God had to make the first move from an acoustical perspective. As in, for example, when he says, "Let there be light," and there was light. But we believe that if we can create the right acoustic and provide the appropriate vibrational context, it will be possible to actually produce the voice of God in a faith-based conflict whereby God is on our side.
When Joshua's priests marched around Jericho blowing their shofars, I believe they were harnessing God's power. They were transforming it into a frightful military weapon through the purity of the priests. And Joshua could harness his power, part of the frightful secret workings of this weapon. It was like ancient magic, not so different from the secret of the atomic bomb itself. The workings of particle physicists are often seen as a modern extension of alchemy, and scientists could be seen as the modern priests who manipulate these mysterious great powers.
Sound source. Infrasound from nonlinear superposition of two ultrasound beams. Effects. Intolerable sensations. Targets. Riot control. Sound source. Very low frequency noise. Effects. Disorientation. Vomiting fits. Bowel spasms. Uncontrollable defecation. Targets. Enemy troops.
Yes, I'm excited. I'm excited because it appears that we may get a chance to test our system real soon. And it turns out this test may take place not far from those old walls at Jericho.
The troubling aspect to me of these sonic weapons, acoustic weapons, sound weapons, and this type of exotica is that there is also a contention on the part of the proponents that the physical principles associated with the application of the weaponry needs to be secret because countermeasures could be developed.
We are at the dawn of a new era for military history, marked by the dominance of a weapon system based on the most powerful sound in the universe. Joshua shouted, "Glory!" And the walls came tumbling down.
Most of these programs are rather elliptical and vaporous, difficult to grasp onto, difficult to get a lot of detail about. And that makes it very difficult then, therefore, to assess whether or not they indeed, well, whether they work. And then on the other hand, what kind of adverse humanitarian impact they would have if they were employed in a widespread way on the battlefield.
True sound of all true sounds, true voice of all true voices. True God of all true gods, Lord, hear our prayer.
Lord, hear our prayer.
Execute your absolute command, which is our absolute convocation. Your will, which is our will, your eternal sounding, which is our eternal call. Lord, hear our prayer.
Lord, hear our prayer.
We, who long to hear you, await the power of your glory. For the last sound on earth shall be the first sound in paradise. Lord, hear our prayer.
Lord, hear our prayer.
When the land of Jericho and the walls came tumbling down.
City.